All right, it's Tuesday, January 17th. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. All right, so okay. It is baseball season, but how great is football, right? Come on, what a weekend.
No, it's baseball season, Adam.
I know.
Basketball season, guys.
But I'm sure, you know, you're a little upset. I get it, because the Chiefs. But hey, Danny Duffy got signed. That was cool.
I was very excited about the Duffy signing and the form that this Royals team beyond 2017 is taking. But I'm more excited about the launch of our fantasy baseball product and our top 600 rankings and our auction values and sleepers and breakouts and busts and team outlooks and woo!
And, well, yeah. The team outlooks and Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hey.
Yeah, team outlooks. I've been reading those. We're going to talk about some of those today. I've got some thoughts on your Oakland, Detroit, Boston, Texas, and San Diego outlooks. Of course, I thought Scott was going to be on the podcast today.
Well, you thought so wrong.
I know. I did a couple of his outlooks. We'll have to talk about them without him. Excuse me. But yeah, when is all that stuff launching? Give me some details.
We will have rankings live by next week.
Yes.
I think by Tuesday.
Tuesday is the expected date.
We will have sleepers, breakouts, busts, a really cool series that Chris is doing. It's a surprise.
Oh.
Surprise.
All up by next week.
It's definitely
we
not
currently
a
have team. It's totally a surprise.
Oh.
Does anybody that's listening know that it's coming?
Well, no, only because you wouldn't say what it was.
It's a surprise.
Okay.
and we have team outlooks going up every day.
Yeah, they're cool. They're really good.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this being the big surprise of our launch now?
It's really a bad idea. Like, anytime you can heighten expectations for me, that really is going to work out well for everyone.
You know what I noticed when I was reading the team outlooks? You guys are very good writers, and you don't get enough credit for that. And I'll tell you, I am a terrible writer. It is harder than it appears. I try to write these little entries around the podcast. Hey, today on the podcast, I suck at writing.
Well, that's the worst stuff.
So what? We're just looking at Chris's and Scott's articles today?
No. I read your Red Sox article was in there. I read all about regression. I've read your other stuff. Come on. You guys are good writers.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one would hope so.
Well, yeah.
It'd be really bad if we weren't.
I thought it was going to be easy to write stuff, and then no, it really isn't. So, anyway, enough about you. Let's talk about baseball.
Praising us.
Yeah. All right, let's talk baseball. Our email address is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And Daniel has an email, so I'm going to just lay out the show for everyone today. We'll do some of those team observations. We'll talk about Danny Duffy. We'll talk about Jose Bautista, Kyle Schwarber, the leadoff hitter, and Michael Saunders going to Philadelphia. But first, a couple of questions from the crowd. Daniel says, can you do an analysis of Michael Fulmer versus Danny Duffy? Which would be the best three-year keeper? I'm leaning towards Duffy because of the strikeout potential. Would Duffy potentially being traded to a contender at the trade deadline be something to consider? I can't see that happening after the contract they just gave him. It's a head-to-head categories league for him, which is a little bit different. You know, innings pitched is a category, quality starts, ERA, whip, and strikeouts per nine. So Duffy could have a big edge there over Fulmer. Could. That said, let's. I don't like to take an email of the day and make it so specific, so we'll answer Daniel's question. But overall, your analysis of Duffy versus Fulmer, who do you like better?
I think we definitely like Duffy, and I think he's on the and Daniel's on the right track in that Duffy just has more upside, and that tends to come down to just the peripherals. Danny Duffy's strikeout rate was really high last season. His walk rate was exceptional for a power pitcher. Fly ball rate a little higher than you would hope, but he plays in a good park to mitigate that. I just think you look at the total package, and as long as what we saw last year was real, I think Danny Duffy has the potential to be an ace.
There's definitely more ace potential for Duffy. I think you could make a fairly solid argument that either both Duffy and Fulmer could regress next year.
Sure.
But Fulmer's is a lot easier to make. I mean, it's not really easy to be as good as he was striking out 7.5 batters per nine.
Yeah.
Especially in the American League. So yeah, I would take Duffy. I would say if it was like a forever keeper, it becomes much closer. Because Duffy's 28. Yeah. He's not young. But he'll just 28 to 31 is still in a pitcher's prime.
Man, Fulmer, the strikeouts are a huge difference there. But Fulmer, he had a 2.25 ERA after they both kind of struggled down the stretch. After August 14th, he threw a complete game shutout at Texas. Fulmer had a 2.25 ERA. Then he gave up 6 earned runs at Boston, which happens, and kind of struggled down the stretch. But what I just found amazing, he gets off to a slow start, right? Like 4 starts, 6.52 ERA for Fulmer to start the season. Next 10 starts, he gave up 6 earned runs, 0.83 ERA in 10 starts. And here's another thing, like from the analytics department to you guys. I looked at the swinging strike rates, right? For Fulmer and for Duffy. And Baseball Reference is a little strange. Maybe you guys can help me out, right? If you go to a guy's game log and you select a certain amount of games, it'll tell you the swinging strike percentage. But if you go to his main page, that same player's main page, you click on more stats and you get the swinging strike percentage there, that number's always higher than the game log page. Are you aware of this? Am I misreading it? What is happening there?
I always use Fangraphs for that
stuff. Yeah, I either use Fangraphs or Brooks Baseball.
Well, can you tell me if Duffy and Fulmer have swinging strike rates that are so different that would lead to the strikeout rate difference? Because what I saw was no, based on in that 10-game stretch with the 0.83 ERA, he still only had 55 strikeouts and 65 and a third for Fulmer, but his swinging strike rate was not much lower than Duffy's.
So in the 10-game stretch that was the best of Fulmer's...
But even then, the strikeouts were low, is what I'm saying. So I can't imagine it was that much different, but I will check that too.
Duffy's for the season was 12.9%. Fulmer's was 10.4%. This is, of course, from Fangraphs.
Yeah, that's pretty big, right?
That's a pretty big...
That's a sizable difference, yeah.
Duffy's, and the thing with Duffy last season, his contact rate was down from 82% to 75%. That's contact on pitches that you swing at. He also induced a lot more swing. I think both of those things are telling. I think that's a good sign that he was fooling batters. They were swinging at pitches that they couldn't hit.
So basically what you're telling me is I have to use Fangraphs more.
I mean, Fangraphs is great.
Yeah. It's outstanding. I use it every day.
Fangraphs it is. All right, next email. Email of the day number 2.
Baseball Reference is great, too.
Yeah, very good.
Let's not disparage anyone. We love all sites.
We do. Baseball Reference is amazing. Email of the day number 2, Adam from Chicago, Illinois. Can you talk about BABIP? What is considered a high or low BABIP? What does it say about a hitter or pitcher? How is it calculated? How heavily do you weight BABIP when evaluating players? Let's have a BABIP party, guys.
How is it calculated? Is I believe it's just at bats minus strikeouts minus home runs, and then like hits minus home runs divided by at bats minus strikeouts minus home runs. I think it's something like that.
Very clear. Thank you.
It's basically the number of the balls you put in play that turn into hits.
Yeah, and home runs are not considered balls in play.
And I think one mistake that people make with BABIP is that they think that there is a number like a 300 or 305 or 295 that's average. And that there is, but that doesn't really apply to individual hitters. Like a guy is a 340 BABIP guy like Jose Altuve. That does not mean he's been lucky and he should regress back to 300 because Jose Altuve hits line drives and is very fast and makes good contact. He is going to have a higher BABIP. Someone like Todd Frazier had an exceptionally low BABIP last year. But he also hit like 50% of his pitches in the air.
And a bunch of infield fly balls as well. Those are all things that go into it. It's never quite such a simple thing. But then you look at someone like Chris Bryant's not particularly fast. But he's going to be a high BABIP guy because he hits the ball so dang
like Miggy
hard.
Always has.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so how much do you weigh BABIP when... Why am I saying BABIP? When you evaluate your players?
I use it a lot in my annual and monthly regression columns. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the easiest ways to just find a couple guys for that column.
And it's a very noisy stat.
Yeah.
It can take a long time, more than one season, So that's why if a rookie comes in, you look at Chris Bryant's actually a great example. 151 games in 2015, had a 378 BABIP. He's probably not a 378 BABIP guy.
Trey Turner last year.
Exactly.
But it is something you can also use, like another use of it, is if a guy is getting killed by his batting average and you're looking for a buy low candidate, yes, and you look and see he's got a 225, 240 BABIP and he's not Todd Frazier, then he's probably going to hit better. He might not, but he probably is going to hit better than he's been hitting.
Okay. All right, so it's interesting stuff. We'll talk about it throughout the year. In a little bit, we're going to talk about the A's pitching staff and some of the good young pitchers there and who's fantasy relevant. Craig Kimbrel. Craig Kimbrel has gotten a little bit worse each of the last 2 years. But, you know, you dig inside the numbers, maybe it's not the case. So Heath wrote the Red Sox Outlook. We'll ask about Kimbrel. Carlos Gomez, Nomar Mazara, young Padres hitters. That's coming up. Right now, Danny Duffy, 5-year, $65 million deal. We kind of covered him. How about Jose Bautista closing in on a deal with the Toronto Blue Jays? All right, so I tried to do some number crunching on him based on his baseball reference numbers. He had a .234 batting average last year, Jose Bautista, and he's 36 years old now, only played in 116 games. He had a bad year, right? Home run to fly ball ratio was way down, 14.3%. His previous three seasons, it had been 15.8%. 16% and 17.5%, down to 14.3%. And he hit more ground balls last year, Jose Bautista, but not so much more. It was the highest since 2009. It wasn't that much higher, I guess, than other seasons. But here's another thing I saw with Jose Bautista. He set a career high in line drive rate, 25%. So how did he hit .234? This is a guy who was a top five outfielder in both 2014 and 2015. He was mostly a bust in 2016, but still had a good walk to strikeout ratio. Was 2016 the beginning of the end for the 36-year-old Jose Bautista, or was it a blip and he will bounce back strong?
It was probably the beginning of the end, but I think there is some bounce back potential. This is someone that we talk about, batting average on balls in play. He's always been a low guy. He hits a lot of fly balls. He hits a lot of infield fly balls, and that's a byproduct of his power. He's also a slow guy. He had a .255 BABIP. He's got a .266 BABIP for his career. So he really does need to hit a lot of home runs and avoid strikeouts to have a good batting average or even a passable batting average. I think we can expect some positive regression from him. I wouldn't expect him to be one of the best hitters in baseball like he was at his peak.
No, I've got him right around in points leagues, the number 20 outfielder. I don't really see a very likely path to Jose Bautista being a number one outfielder again, probably ever.
Okay. Would you go with Bautista?
36.
You take Bautista or Ryan Braun?
Braun easily. For me.
Yeah.
Would you take Bautista or McCutcheon?
I'm taking McCutcheon.
Yeah, probably.
Here's a tough one. Bautista or Adam Jones?
In points, I'm taking Jones. In Roto, I'll take Bautista.
I'd probably still go with Bautista.
So why would you take Jones in points? But Bautista's better in points because he walks so much. His batting average is low. It kind of sinks him a bit in Roto.
Yeah. I think he's going to definitely beat Jones in home runs.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think he's going to definitely beat Jones in probably RBI. I don't know where else he's going to beat Jones in Roto.
In Roto, yeah. No, that's a good point. Okay. Well, that's Jose Bautista for you. We'll react when he becomes a Blue Jay, if he becomes a Blue Jay. Man, teams are going to get some good bargains on Encarnacion and Bautista. If you can bring him back for 1 year.
Never sign anyone on the first day of free agency.
Never sign anyone on the first day?
Yeah. I mean, there's always bargains in every sport, and nobody ever learns.
Well, you know, still, the guys that go on the first day are often the best guys.
Yeah, but you have to pay for them.
You do.
Yeah,
there weren't a lot of overpriced guys this year just because
nobody was good.
So weird. Everybody thought that because there weren't very many good players, that bad players would just go for more. And instead, good players just went for less. I don't really understand it.
Well, I think this is a pretty interesting signing. Kind of low risk. Michael Saunders to the Phillies for 1 year. I wrote down $5 million. I think it might be $9 million.
$5 million would be a good deal.
$9 million would be a good deal.
I'm pretty much for all 1 year deals, but it is 1 year and $9 million for Michael Saunders, who half the season was pretty darn good. Is he only NL only for you, Michael Saunders to the Phillies?
He is a guy that I've moved down in my rankings multiple times because my initial rankings, I really kind of thought that he was like a top 45 outfielder probably. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that was wrong. Like I wanted to see where he signed. If he's going to play every day, he's probably going to hit in the middle of the order.
Yeah, I can't imagine 40 better outfielders, like obvious ones.
Right, so that makes him a borderline startable outfielder in a points league and a must-start in a roto.
Who are some of the guys, I can't see your full list of rankings, who are some of the guys that are around 40, do you know?
I believe that's the Josh Reddick, Shin-Soo Chu, Alex Gordon, Jason Hayward, right, okay, in that range, which I think is about where he belongs. A couple, right, of those guys are going to be top 30 outfielders, and a couple of them are going to stink.
24 homers last year for Michael Saunders. Chris, how do you feel about him going to the Phillies?
It's not a big park downgrade, which is a good thing. Philadelphia is a pretty good place to hit. I just wonder, like, if his upside is in the top 40 range, given his injury history, it's kind of hard to draft him there.
Yeah, I think he has top 30 upside.
Okay.
But there's not really a big difference between top, I mean, that's kind of splitting hairs. I think a good, like Hayward and Gordon and Saunders are all probably pretty good comps of each other.
Okay, but I don't think it's even a question. Of those three, I'm taking Jason Hayward first.
I don't know.
I think it's a pretty big question.
Oh, come on.
I have them all quite a bit lower than Heath was talking about. I have them more in the 60 range.
Jason Hayward?
I'm actually pulling my rankings up now to see. I've
Jason Hayward's not good.
Well, Hayward's not bad, though. You know,
okay, it depends. If he's anything like last year, he's bad.
Last year was
terrible.
There are
a lot of warning signs.
But going into last year, you were not putting Jason Hayward in the same conversation as Alex Gordon and
Alex Gordon was in a different conversation. Yeah.
Alex Gordon?
Yes.
He was such an overrated player. He had 1 year with a ton of doubles and became an overrated player.
Like you, the same guys in that range, Michael Brantley?
No, Brantley, sure. way ahead of them.
You don't even know if Brantley's going to play.
Well, okay, yes.
Your draft pick.
I'd you still have rather to have Brantley.
Know that.
If he doesn't play?
Yes.
Cole Calhoun?
That's a good one. Because he's kind of like, he's unpredictable, he's kind of whatever. Not going to win you a fantasy league necessarily.
Jay Bruce?
I think I'd rather have Jay Bruce.
Than Hayward?
Yes.
Oh, wow. And Chu?
Chu a little less is a little more questionable just because the injury concerns are a lot bigger there. Yeah, I think I'd rather have Chu than Hayward.
Man. All right. And you guys think Kyle Schwarber is really going to lead off for the Cubs?
I don't have any idea. Like, the Cubs' everyday lineup is not existent.
Yeah.
Like,
they're going to move guys around. They'll have, you know, he's not even going to play the same position every day.
I'm hoping that he gets 550 plate appearances.
Leading off, he might only need like 100 games to do that.
Would be strange. Would be strange to have Kyle Schwarber as your leadoff hitter.
I think Kyle Schwarber loses, like, the whole Kyle Schwarber leadoff hitter thing, we normally boost guys up in points leagues if they're leading off. Don't give him that boost.
Why?
Because one of the reasons you're boosting them up is the likelihood they get an extra at bat in the eighth or ninth inning.
Yeah.
The likelihood is that Schwarber's not still in the game because they've got a lead and they bring somebody in for defense.
That's actually a pretty good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. His runs would go up, his RBIs would go down. I do think there's one thing that could really help, and that would be he would get better pitches to hit if he's hitting in front of two of the best hitters in the NL in baseball, and Bryant and Rizzo. But that's interesting. Yeah, they don't have a true leadoff hitter without Dexter Fowler. People think it should be Ben Zobrist. That makes a little more sense, but we shall see. But Zobrist is another guy. He's like, where does he play?
Somewhere.
Yeah, Zobrist, in one way, I feel like he's the most secure because he's the veteran leadership and he'll play wherever they want to put him that day. In another way, though, I could absolutely see this being the year that Zobrist just goes off a cliff. I mean, he's 36.
Sure, yeah.
And they've got a ton of talent.
I would love Zobrist hitting leadoff because he still gets on base.
Oh, yeah.
And anybody who hits leadoff for the Cubs is going to be pretty much a must-start in fantasy.
Yep.
Right?
And it doesn't really matter that he's slow because the guys behind him don't hit singles. So
exactly, exactly.
He is super slow.
Okay. From Ben Zobrist to Sonny Gray, Sean Manaea, Kendall Graveman, Andrew Triggs, Jarrell Cotton. You guys weren't on the show late last year when I kept singing the Touch the Feel of Cotton, the Fabric of Our Lives song for Jarrell Cotton. Also, Heath has a look on his face like, am I too old to know this reference?
No, I mean, I know what you're referring to.
Yeah.
I don't think you sang the jingle at all.
Oh, I sang it with Scott all the time. It was the end of the year, and it was basically
You may have sung it. I don't think you sang it correctly.
Oh, come on. No, I would do the touch, the feel of cotton, and Scott would come in with the Fabric of Our Lives part. It was great
stuff.
I hope
Scott did a better job.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, anyway.
How nice for you guys.
These four pitchers, or these five pitchers, four young guys and Sonny Gray, he's not exactly old. Chris, what are your takeaways when you look at the staff, the pitching staff for the Oakland A's? You did the outlook for the website.
Last season, the A's were the worst defense in baseball.
Yes.
I would expect some positive regression in that regard, even if they aren't stacked with helpful defenders, just because... Anytime a team is the worst in baseball at something, you should generally expect them to regress, even if they're one of the worst. So I think they'll get a little help in that regard. I think Sonny Gray almost certainly can't be as bad as he was last year. You look at a lot of the peripherals are basically the same. The fastball velocity was actually pretty much identical. The young guys are really interesting, though. Sean Manaea especially closed out last season really strong, got the strikeout rate up to around 8. Got over some of the control issues that plagued him. I think he had a sub-3 ERA in his last 14 appearances. One of them was a relief appearance. He's really interesting. He's going to be one of my favorite breakout candidates this season.
The Athletics were -72 mm-hmm. in defensive runs saved last year. Mm-hmm. That's 16 runs worse than any other team.
Yeah, so yes. They could be the 28th worst team in baseball and probably save 30 runs, right?
Yes, it killed Sonny Gray, who is kind of a pitch-to-contact type pitcher. I would expect Sonny Gray is going to be better. Sonny Gray is going to be useful. Sonny Gray is going to be on your roster almost all year long. I think both Cotton and Manaea have a chance to either break out or be dropped. And I don't really have any interest in Graveman or Triggs. I don't understand how Triggs is even a starter.
It's really weird. Like, he didn't start at all throughout the minors. I think he made 4 minor league starts, and then they called him up to start in the majors, and he was pretty decent. Got up to the high 80s at times. What?
Nothing. It's just like we were praising him for getting up into the high 80s.
In pitches.
Oh.
Not wild. In pitches.
Even so.
I will say Jarrell Cotton, this is both a... It won't sound like a compliment, but I do mean it that way, but also it's an insult. He reminds me a lot of Ruby De La Rosa. He's a fastball changeup guy. Those are his two best pitches. Ruby De La Rosa has always been someone that, when things are right, he looks really interesting. And then he gives up like 3 home runs in a row and stops looking quite so interesting. But Jarrell Cotton doesn't have to play at Chase Field. He gets to play at the O.co Coliseum. That's a great place to be if you're going to be a homer-prone pitcher.
And he didn't strike anybody out in his 5 starts last year, but he'd really been a pretty good strikeout pitcher in the minors. So he'd kind of been bad at everything else besides striking people out. But.
This is Jarrell Cotton. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever seen the movie Best of the Best 2?
No.
No.
Wayne Newton just keeps going, "The Coliseum!"
Is that just to Oakland?
Chris kind of reminded me of that, you know. There you go. There you go.
You really brought it today. I was worried that, you know, Chris and I in a hurry, in a rush, might not have the NRG this morning,
mm-hmm.
this afternoon, but you're making up for all of us.
Yeah, I'm trying, you know. I got to pick it up. All right, so we go over to the Detroit. Oh, wait, real quick. Sonny Gray or Tyson Ross? Who are you taking a late-round flyer on?
Sonny Gray.
Sonny Gray.
Ooh, okay. Sonny Gray or Sean Manaea?
I think I'd rather have Manaea just because I feel like there's more upside there, and that might just be giving him credit for not being quite as bad as Gray was last year.
Okay. And have you ever seen Best of the Best 1?
Yeah.
Hmm.
James Did they Earl tie Jones. Up the story?
What'd you say?
Did they tie up the story in the sequel?
No. No, the story tied up perfectly at the end of the first one. Okay, over to the Detroit Tigers. Scott White wrote this team outlook. They're really quick. They're good reads. They're interesting. They're kind of get you like Chris in his Rangers outlook just talked about the team and whether or not they're going to be able to be over 500. So it's a good preview for the season. Yeah, fun stuff. Jordan Zimmermann, though, for the Tigers. Will Jordan Zimmermann be worth drafting? You know, guys, it's easy to forget. First month of the season, Jordan Zimmermann had a .55 ERA. He got off to a great start. He was really even good for the next two starts. So seven starts with a .150 ERA. And then seven earned runs against the Twins. And things just got terrible from there. There was an injury. He was really awful, Jordan Zimmermann. So do you guys, I don't know, in any of the drafts you've done, have you found yourself even considering Jordan Zimmermann?
Not really. You might reach a point where at the end of a draft, he's a name that you recognize and you're running out of time on the clock. But I mean, we're talking about a guy whose velocity dropped 1.2 miles per hour on his fastball, from 2015 to 2016 and 2 full miles per hour from 2014 to 2015. That coincided with a big drop in strikeout rate and a big drop in his swinging strike rate. There are a lot of red flags here.
I don't really know that I see a huge difference, though, between him and Sonny Gray.
Like, okay.
Good Sonny Gray and good Jordan Zimmermann look a lot alike.
Yeah, I just think there's a better chance we'll see good Sonny Gray.
I don't know. And
he's 5 years younger.
That's true.
And Jordan Zimmerman's moving in the wrong direction.
Well, so is Sonny Gray.
Yeah, but Jordan Zimmermann has more apparent red flags. His strikeout rate disappeared. His fastball velocity went down. His swing strike rate went down. None of those things are necessarily true for Sonny Gray.
It's also two kind of concerning years in a row because Zimmermann was frustrating. He went from being very solid to being frustrating to being terrible.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to give you some of the names of the pitchers who were drafted at the end of a head-to-head points league draft we did a couple of months ago. And you tell me if you would take Jordan Zimmermann over any of these guys. Would you take him over Edinson Volquez?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Would you take him over Matt Moore?
100%.
You would?
Yes. Chris said no.
I would rather have Moore.
Would you take Zimmermann over Brandon Finnegan?
I'd rather have Finnegan.
I'd probably take Zimmermann.
All right. Would you take Joe Musgrove or Jordan Zimmermann?
Musgrove's such a weird
guy. Yeah, I think I'd take Zimmermann.
Guy. Like, he's not particularly impressive when you watch him, but the numbers are in the minors were impressive. I'd probably rather have Musgrove just for the apparent upside.
Good for you, Chris. That was my pick. All right, next up, let's go to the Red Sox, written by Mr. Heath Cummings. Is there anything wrong with Craig Kimbrel, this podcast host wonders? What is your take on Craig Kimbrel, Heath?
Well, you know, we had kind of talked about Craig Kimbrel earlier in the offseason and how terrible his finish to the year was. And so I kind of got to looking at, like, when did he go bad? What was wrong? He had that injury that forced him to miss almost a month.
Meniscus, right?
Yeah. And then he came back from the meniscus, and he was just absolutely lights out. Like, he went 17 innings and gave up 2 runs or something. And then at the very end of the regular season, he gave up 4 runs in one start, or one outing, had 2 others where he gave up a run. One of them was a solo homer. And so those last 3 outings destroyed his September ERA.
Yeah, no, Kimbrel would have ended the season with a 2.52 ERA until his last four appearances. It's brought it up to 3.40.
Yeah. I mean, his walk rate was definitely worse last year. He struggled with walks just a little bit. But again, he had six walks in his last two innings. I would guess that probably didn't help his walk rate.
He also had a four-walk outing at one point.
Yeah, he's always been a guy that struggled with that a little bit. But if he would have just totally lost it, I think that it might have shown up in the four batters he faced in the postseason. He struck out three of them. I don't think there's anything wrong with Craig Kimbrel. Like, maybe he's not the elite finish closer he was 3 years ago in his very best year, but I don't think he's noticeably worse than he was last year.
Yeah, velocity was still there. Both the fastball and curveball were rated out as very valuable pitches according to Fangraphs pitching weights.
He had some sequencing problems. Like, he just gave up, he'd go 16 innings and not give up a hit, and then he'd give up five hits in the same inning.
But swing strike rate still very strong. Yeah, I'm not too concerned with him.
Not too concerned, sure, but do you think he's still capable of having like a sub 2 ERA? Because Kimbrel did that 3 years in a row. And then it was 2.58 in 2015 and 3.40, but right around 2.50 until the last four appearances of the season last year.
I'm struggling. Like, the environment's different than it was then a little bit, too.
Sure.
I'm struggling to say that really any, like, what closers are we going to say are capable of having a sub-2 ERA?
Well, I think you would have said that about Kimbrel.
Aroldis Chapman. Maybe Edwin Diaz, maybe Wade Davis.
If Edwin Diaz and Wade Davis are capable, then I think that yes, Kimbrel is as well.
Sure. I have him number 7 at relief pitcher.
Who's in front?
Kenley Jansen, Zach Britton, Aroldis Chapman, Danny Duffy, Edwin Diaz, Sungwano.
Okay. Yeah, it's weird. It's like I can't really pinpoint what it is, but it just seems like Kimbrel is a little bit worse than he used to, and maybe it's just he never used to have blowups, and now he'll have one or two here or there, and they hurt the end of season numbers. They don't tell the full story that for the most part, Kimbrel still is really, really good day in, day out.
Yeah, I've got him 6th. He's not what he was, but what he was for 2 or 3 years was the best closer in baseball. He can drop from that level and still be a top 10 closer easily.
Yeah, I mean, he still struck out 83 batters in 53 innings.
Right.
It's amazing. Okay, let's go to the Rangers, written by Chris Towers. Can Carlos Gomez, Chris, be better than Nomar Mazara? Which might sound crazy, but Nomar Mazara was not even a top 50 outfielder last year, and he played almost an entire season. That is hard to do. He was better in real life than fantasy. He never steals a base. And then Gomez with the Rangers, 905 OPS, 284 in batting average, 8 home runs in 33 games. Do you think Carlos Gomez could be better than Nomar Mazara?
For me, the question is more about Gomez than Mazara. Mazara, I'm not even sure if he was better in real life than fantasy. He got off to a great start. His first 50 games were fantastic, but there was a lot of smoke and mirrors there. And it's fair. He's still 21 years old. So
right.
You want to be careful to not be too critical, but he had a low fly ball rate, 29%. He had a really high home run to fly ball ratio, 16%. That was backed up by a 28% hard hit rate. That's one of the bigger gaps in baseball between hard hit rate and home run to fly ball ratio. He is one of my, I think, one of the most obvious power regression candidates, assuming based on what he did last year.
Yeah, he only hit 20 home runs, too. It's not like he...
Yeah.
And by the way, do you know how many extra base hits Nomar Mazara had against lefties?
Probably not many.
111 at-bats. How many extra base hits against lefties for Nomar Mazara?
6.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
6?
I'm going to give 7.
2!
Wow.
Yeah, really bad.
And, you know, I still think you can squint and very easily see a future superstar here, but he's a ways away from that right now.
Okay.
So it's more about whether you think Carlos Gomez in September was a sign of things to come for him. And that's a lot harder to say because he'd been really bad for about 130 games before that.
Yeah. Mazara is like a decade younger than Gomez is. There's no doubt who you're taking. Mazzara over
Price. I do have Mazzara exactly one spot higher.
Oh, really?
This is so weird for you.
Why?
He's 21 years old.
That's fine.
You don't hold that against kids.
I'm not holding it against him.
You are by ranking him that low.
I don't think I am.
If you are the low guy on Nomar Mazzara in the industry, then you are holding it against him.
I'm looking at what he was last year, and what he was last year was a long way away.
Right, but we aren't ranking every fantasy baseball player by what they were last year. And if anybody should improve, it's a 21-year-old.
Yes, but he has to improve a lot. I think the skill set's further away than...
Well, where do you have him? Like, where do you have
50.
50th?
Yes.
So you're just higher on Gomez, I think, than everybody else.
Sure.
All right, well, give me, like, 3 or 4 outfielders that you have ahead of Nomar Mazzara.
Let me see. In head-to-head, I have Jay Bruce, Cole Calhoun, and Melky Cabrera.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'd probably aim upside... But I do.
Sure, Mazzara definitely has a ton of upside.
I've got him right behind Yasmani Tomas, who I think is kind of a fun comp, in only that everybody criticized Tomas for his first year in the majors because he didn't hit for enough power. Mazzara shouldn't have hit for enough power last year. That's kind of what we're holding against him. And then Tomas bounced back and hit 30 home runs.
What I think is interesting about Mazzara, you know, he's just so young, but the minor league numbers were not a huge... wasn't a huge power hitter. I think the most he hit in a season in the minors was 22 home runs.
Yeah.
He doesn't steal any bases either.
He was an exceptionally young player at pretty much every step of his minor league career. The minor league numbers are mostly just okay.
But you hit 22 home runs in the minors at 19 years old, and they're expecting big things.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, great. And last one here. This was a Scott White piece on the San Diego Padres. Will Hunter Renfroe, Manuel Margot, and Austin Hedges matter in fantasy? Renfroe, Margot, and catcher Austin Hedges, will they matter in fantasy? Do you guys have Renfroe ranked higher than those Rangers outfielders that we just talked about?
No,
I don't.
Okay, do you think these guys are going to matter in fantasy?
I kind of think there's a chance that in Roto, Margot does.
Okay.
I think he can, like, get the bat on the ball enough, and with his speed, get on base enough to steal a bunch of bases.
Well, what about Renfroe's power? He had 4 home runs in 11 games. Getting called up at 371. He's 24 years old.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be the least excited about him. That 4 home runs in 11 games doesn't really tell me anything. Oh, he hit 30 in AAA last year. That's great.
That is, yeah.
But again, it's like we were just talking about with Mazzara. As a 24-year-old in AAA, you should be killing it, or you're probably not a Major League Baseball player. It doesn't tell me that he's going to be a star.
No, he's played 154 games at AAA in his career. He has 36 home runs, a .310 batting average. However, plate discipline is a real issue for him. And that could end up holding him back. He doesn't strike out a crazy amount, but he also never walks.
Okay. That's Hunter Renfroe we're talking about. And just to bring it back to something we talked about earlier, while I did say, I foolishly said that I couldn't think of like 40 outfielders that would be better than Michael Saunders. You know, I guess I'm just not really that familiar with the rankings once they're that deep. I think I would take Renfroe over Saunders. Like, I would expect Saunders to be better, but... you know, Saunders isn't a great player.
I have Renfroe one spot ahead of Saunders. Like, where would you put Eric Thames with those guys?
You asking me?
Yeah.
Boy, is he a tricky one to rank. I haven't thought about it at all. I guess I would probably... I would take him ahead of them. I would take Thames.
Lots of each other for me.
I've got Thames at 70, Renfroe 71, Saunders 72 right now. And I'm probably going to move Saunders back up now that he's got a team.
Yeah. All right. Saunders has just been kind of... potential guy for so long, and it hasn't done it for long, and haven't put it together for a full season. But there is like probably more steadiness to him than the other two guys. So it might depend 3 outfielder versus 5 outfielder. You know, am I starting this guy? Is he a bench guy? Is he just a flyer that I can afford to cut, or is he really important to my roster? Well, More team outlooks on the website. So go to cbssports.com/fantasy. I imagine we'll talk about more of these on the podcast as well. Let's read some emails. This email is from Jack Bauer. Yeah. That doesn't...
I never watched that show.
Yeah, okay. Me either.
I've watched... it's funny. That doesn't sound like the type of show that you'd be able to just watch parts of.
Yeah, I feel like that's the whole point.
But I've watched parts of it.
Which hours?
I think I watched one whole day.
But like over the course of like 6 years?
It was probably over the course of a day. It was when I was living by myself down here.
Chris, have you been watching the OA?
No.
Okay. I'm like five episodes in. I'm not going to let the OA sponsor our show the way I let Stranger Things sponsor our show. It's not quite there.
Not quite in the same
category? Definitely
not.
So, the question from Jack Bauer. 2016 seemed to be the year of the home run. Any insights on why Bryce Harper got left out?
There is a really, really fantastic piece on FanGraphs from about late August, maybe September of last season, talking about how we might have, maybe should have seen Bryce Harper's power regression coming.
Fooey! Oh. He was hurt! Everybody knows he was hurt!
That's fine.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Fooey.
He could have,
stop
like,
being so dumb, Chris.
He could have been hurt and also... like had power regression coming in, and the
wait. Can I propose something without, hopefully, without offending you guys? It's meant to be a fun joke. Let's do the regression-o-meter, but we're not doing it with players. We're doing it with the two of you, and we'll throw all of us. How many times will we say the word regression on the air? Because I think we're going to break the meter.
It's a good word.
It is. There's probably five times on the show already.
Well, I'm writing a whole series about it, so I will probably set the record.
Okay. So, back to Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
I believe on fly balls and line drives in 2015, he had a 1200 slugging percentage in that area, which led baseball. But he was pretty, like, he was good, but not great when it came to exit velocity on home runs or in line drives and fly balls.
Really? How could he had a 41% hard contact rate.
I'm just telling you what the
that seems pretty great.
I'm just telling you what the numbers said.
Okay.
Four players. He was like, I think like 93, 94 miles per hour on his home run on his line drives and fly balls. The expected exit their slugging percentage for players in that range was in the 800 to 900 range. So, that was a big part of it. He seemed to just get a little lucky.
Right.
Well, he was great. He was incredible.
His hard contact rate last year dropped 20%.
Yes.
His soft contact rate went up astronomically.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit a lot less line drives.
Yes.
Like, he wasn't as good last year.
None of those things are mutually exclusive from the fact that he maybe overperformed a little bit in 2015. Like, he had a 27% home run to fly ball ratio.
All right, so he had 42 home runs. So he could have hit 36 and people would have been fine with it.
Right.
But Harper only hit 24.
So you add all these things together, it was a worst case scenario year for him.
Yeah. I would say mostly because he got hurt. I would say. Right. And I don't know. But I just know the reports that came out, and he played through with a shoulder injury.
So where are we setting Harper's? What's his true talent home run number?
That's really, really hard to say. I would set it right around 30.
30?
I think I'd set it at 34.
He's only done that once. He's only hit 30 once.
He does have more 40 homer seasons than Giancarlo Stanton, though.
That's fair.
I mean, look, unless you think that Harper is just completely overrated, his talent is exceptional. We know this. He's one of the best talents in baseball.
Okay, but if he hits 30 home runs, scores 100 runs, drives in 100 runs, and steals 20 bases, he's one of the top three assets in fantasy baseball.
It's a hell of a year, but the steals were a little surprising last year.
But I think that's a positive mark.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He could be the number one player in baseball.
Yeah, absolutely.
With 30 homers, he could.
If he hits 30 home runs with the numbers that you just gave, yes, of course he could be. But how is he better than Mookie Betts?
I don't expect Mookie Betts to hit 30 home runs, yeah, and I think he has some run and RBI regression coming.
Yeah, but he'll distance himself, I think, from Harper and steals, and he'll be around 25 home runs, no?
I would say 20 to 25. He hits a lot of fly balls, yes.
He hit 31 home runs and had only 26 steals last year. Okay, I thought it was a little
more. I believe he had 9 home runs last year that would have not been out in 20 parks.
And they were out of Fenway?
Yes.
So why would I care?
Fenway helps, but he didn't have that kind of luck in 2015.
Right. Well,
I think
better.
He only had 2 or 3 of those home runs in Fenway in 2015.
All right. How do you know all these things off the top of your head?
I've written about all these guys in the last week.
Oh,
specifically
okay.
About these topics. It's total luck. I'm actually an idiot, and it's just we happen to talk about like the three things I know.
It's the surprise.
The big surprise, yes.
Oh, the big surprise.
I can't wait for the reveal.
All right, that's email. That's the first email. Let's go to a few more. Ryan in Detroit. I'm keeping Trey Turner in the 24th round, so I need help with 2 more keepers. One of the keepers will be either Anthony Rizzo in the first round. He can keep him for this year and next year. Or Jose Altuve in the second round. He can only keep him for 1 more year. So would you take a first round Rizzo for 2 years or a second round Altuve for 1 year?
Probably Rizzo.
You expect Altuve to be better, right?
I do have him ranked ahead of Rizzo, but I think probably once in the next 3 years, Rizzo is going to be the best lead all hitters in fantasy points.
That's entirely possible. I think you probably go Rizzo, yeah.
Okay, now for the other keeper, Jacob DeGrom, 19th round, Steven Strasburg, 7th round for 3 more years, or Andrew Miller, 16th round for 3 more years.
Was DeGrom how many years?
He didn't say, so I'm thinking 1. Otherwise, it'd be a pretty easy call, right?
Then I would take Strasburg. If it's DeGrom 1 and Strasburg 3, I'd take Strasburg.
Yeah.
Okay. Next email. Adam in Portland. Dear Hearth, Flue, Chimney, and Kindling?
Fireplace.
Yeah, these are all things that you make a fire with.
Oh, really? Okay.
Or including where you make fire? I'm from Miami. Trying. I'm doing the best I can with what God gave me.
Okay. How do you value Alex Cobb this year, and how about Joe Ross?
Well, I actually just wrote about Cobb because I was doing the Rays outlook. And the problem I have is there's certain reasons to be enthusiastic about him, but it feels like his upside is like 140 innings maybe of around 3 ERA, which is kind of like a poor man's Rich Hill. Because I would expect Rich Hill to give you that.
But Rich Hill has more upside.
More upside.
Like Rich Hill doesn't have a specific reason to believe he can't throw 200 innings.
Other than he's Rich Hill.
The fact that he's never done it, he's 37, blah, blah, blah. But Cobb definitely won't. Like, even the best case scenario Cobb season doesn't have him throwing 200 innings.
No.
Well, yeah, why did you lowball it so much, though? Like, what did you say, 130?
For Rich Hill or
no,
Cobb?
No, for Alex Cobb.
I said 140 to 150 just because he's thrown, 25 in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe. Most guys don't throw that much in their first year back from Tommy John.
But this is his second year back from Tommy John.
Well, but what are we counting last year as?
His first year back from Tommy John. Well, only 22 innings. Yeah, okay.
Maybe 170 is the ceiling. Teams usually feel pretty comfortable going about 150 up.
All right. So, yeah, who's the other guy? Joe Ross. Who would you rather have, Joe Ross or Alex Cobb?
Joe Ross.
Yeah, Joe Ross was a little disappointing. He started out really good.
Yeah.
Didn't really come through. I was excited about him. I had him on a lot of teams. What do you think about Joe Ross this year?
I like him. I don't love him. I think there's still a lot of upside there. What was his injury last year?
I don't remember.
He missed time. He only threw 105 innings. But I still think there's, really solid upside. I don't know if there's like a kind of the kind of obvious comparison will always be to Tyson Ross. I don't know if he has Tyson Ross upside with the strikeout rate.
He had right shoulder inflammation.
Yeah. I like him, but I definitely don't love him.
Okay. So Sean Manaea or Joe Ross?
Manaea.
It's just funny because Ross came up with a good pedigree, right? Good numbers. Did pretty darn well. Gave us a lot of reasons to be excited after his cup of coffee in 2015 to come up in 2016. Disappoints in 2016. No reason why that can't happen to Sean Manaea, but Manaea's kind of like the shiny new toy right now. And Manaea wasn't that good last year. He finished pretty strong, but he also had a lot of trouble working the third time through the order. His ERA was over 8 the third time through the order. So I don't, you know, it's almost like, you know how Chris, you talk about how we forget about guys when they don't do well. Yes. Like, I wonder if that's going to happen a little bit to Joe Ross.
I think there's probably some of that, and I'm not saying I think Sean Manaea is going to be a lot better. So it's pretty close.
Okay. And we've got an email from Jeff from St. Louis. He says, hey, Isaac, Taylor, and Zach.
I already looked at the email that this came from, but I would have known it even if not.
I would have too. Oom-bop, da-ba-do-bop. You know what's funny is Allie's, my fiance's brother is over, and he just heard that. And when I get off the air, he's going to go, why the hell were you just singing Hanson on the air? And then I'm going to have to explain because Isaac, Taylor, and Zach are the Hanson brothers. 5x5 head-to-head league, we set our lineups daily instead of locking them in for the week. Do you think this format should move closers up because I have more opportunities to play closers without sacrificing starts? If so, which rounds would you look to take the top closers?
I probably still wouldn't get the top closers because I think in a league like that, they might go in the 6th or 7th, and I don't really want to take one that early. But what it would do is cause me to draft more closers. Yeah. I would like to get 3 or 4 of the top 20, really put some other teams in a bad spot. Yeah. And most days you can use all of them.
Yep. Yeah. You definitely want at least one more closer than you normally have. It's a really good strategy. And all you're trying to do is win the saves category. You know, it's going to help you in whip an ERA unless you just have terrible closers. But yeah, I think I totally agree with you, Heath. That's what I was going to say because I did a league just like that. Last year, I had 4 or 5 closers on my roster, but they were not. Maybe there was like one high-end guy. I didn't change my strategy until late in the draft. And then the second there's a closer available on waivers, you go and get them, even if you don't really need them. Good trade chip. Jason in Southgate, Michigan. How would you approach drafting closers if you have a ridiculously early draft? I have a roto draft at the end of January. Okay. Should I try to secure 2 closers I know will have jobs early or punt until the late rounds and try to handcuff a few bullpens that are still in limbo and or spend some early fab on closers once we have a better idea of who will be closing?
I'd probably just try to get 2 of the top 20.
Yeah, that's a tough one because ideally you would just wait and let the Angels and the Twins and the ones like that and the A's figure themselves out, but everyone else in your league is going to be doing that and you're going to have to beat everyone to the waiver wire, and that's always hard. So I would try to get a couple early and then still do that later on.
Yeah, you're going to want more than 2 closers in a roto league.
Yeah, you can still grab. That's why I'm saying you grab maybe you grab 2 in the middle rounds, and then late you grab Cam Bedrosian and try to get, you know, see if you can grab one of those guys.
Can I tell you what I'm not looking forward to? I'm going to tell you, regardless of your answer, I'm not looking forward to the NL-only and AL-only rotisserie mock drafts that we do. Boy, do I hate those. The closers. Forget it.
Yeah. That's a league for a masochist, for sure.
Yeah, those are tough.
Al loved them.
Yeah.
Al did love them. They were the Rick Porcello of fantasy leagues for Al. Well, that's it for us today, guys. Happy to bring the energy over here and the kind of the weirdness. Not gonna lie, it's a little weird today. I thought we needed it. I thought we needed to shake things up. You know, Scott's usually the weird one, right?
Yeah, saying all kinds of crazy things.
All right, Ethan, Chris, thank you for your time. We're gonna be back later in the week with another Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Also gonna be up to 3 a week, maybe as soon as next week. So, you know, get excited about that and tell your friends. Tell your friends. Tell people to subscribe to Fantasy Baseball Today. Tell your friends how weird I am. For Chris Towers and Heath Cummings, I'm Adam Azer. See you later.